You're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
You must unlearn what you have learned.
That it is you who are mistaken about a great many things.
Welcome to another fantastic episode of SWOTOR Reforged. This is episode 31, recorded on Monday, April 7th, 2014. Our show is sponsored in part by Tweaked Audio. TweakedAudio.com, quality headphones, 30% off. You'll need our code off the record at TweakedAudio.com. We'll talk about them later on in the show. And also by AudibleTrial.com/QuestGamingNetwork. Download your free book today at audibletrial.com/QuestGamingNetwork. Today we're going to be discussing the April Fool's Day with a little SWOTOR flair, plus SWOTOR's amazing content cycle and one server to rule them all, as well as Agent Olan's Jedi Archives. He will be presenting the Killix, plus our Star Wars recommendations of the week, the weekly winner of the Lore Masters Star Wars Trivia Question of the Week, including your emails, tweets, and or Facebook posts, and SWOTOR Podcast Fan Site weekly updates on our holofeed. If you want to get in touch with our show, you can email us at swotorreforged@gmail.com. That's SWTORREFORGED@gmail.com, as well as Twitter at SWOTORreforged. You can get us there. I am your host, Jedi Master of Arwen, and right next to me in the cockpit here of the Ebon Millennium is the one and only Agent Olan.
Hello, Eve Arwen. Thank you for the kind intro, sir. Hello, everyone on Twitch and on YouTube. What is going on?
As well as the deadly Sith Lord Korv.
And here I am again, scratching my back with Eve Arwen's lightsaber.
We just cleaned that off from last week's attack of the Treak, which slobbered
when
all over.
You bore
it.
Me, I break out.
Noopa, noopa.
Yeah, that's right, Treak. I know.
Be more entertaining, Jedi. This boredom rash isn't going to clear itself up.
And we also have Bodar! What's up, buddy? Oh, alright. Sorry to hear about that. And we also have Q2F3! And, of course, our wonderful Ewok. You've heard him, or her, rather, earlier. It's Treak.
Yep, yep. Yep, yep.
That's right. How you doing today, Treak? Okay, stop humping my leg, dear. No, stop humping my leg, dear. Would you stop that? Get him off of my leg, please.
Interesting. I didn't think Treak had the anatomy to need to hump.
Yeah, you'd be surprised what's under that fur, I suppose. Right there, Bodar? Yeah.
Oh, that's a disturbing image.
Don't worry, Bodar. It'll grow back one day.
You're telling me you don't have the stain on your leg.
That's disgusting. That's it, Treak. Back in the glove box.
Oh.
Get in the glove box now. Give it some gas, Evolwyn.
I'm not sure what you mean by give it some gas, but...
Probably the mustard variety.
You're right over there, Bodar? Okay. I guess we should probably get into the show then. We've been traveling here in the old hyperlane for a little while now. We're just about to come up on our destination here, which is the Mustafar system. Fred wanted to come here for some reason, but he didn't explain to me what that might be. So I guess what? Oh my God! There's all these asteroids around us. As you can clearly tell by the sudden music that has absolutely no reason being here whatsoever. Oh!
Well, this was not the course I punched in.
Oof. We're kind of taking a lot of damage on the hull from these.
Aw, come on.
Where the hell did we crash, Broadway?
Oh boy. Fred, why did we come into the Mustafar system in the first place?
I don't know. Why am I hearing crappy music?
Jesus, another asteroid! Shoot some of these out of the sky, for God's sake! Oh my goodness.
Why does our gun point at our right wing? Hell, I hope you're happy. Get out of that chair! I'm driving.
Oh!
Well, now we're adrift, unfortunately.
Ah, great.
Bodar, I did... All right, well, it wasn't my fault, Bodar. Well, maybe it was Fred's fault. All right, so...
Better than that, Bodar. We all know what idiot drives the ship every week.
Q2, would you mind giving Bodar a hand there trying to fix some of the ship there?
No, it's a good thing that Evolwyn's a Miraluka, because I'm actually going to get one of those little kid steering wheels and put it on a chair that has nothing to do with piloting the ship. And just let him think he's driving so we don't crash into stuff all the time. Did you know droids could fart?
I had no idea.
I had no idea, and I really wish I hadn't learned that.
All right, well, we cartel pack giveaway announcement. Agent Olan, we have a couple of things here that we want to mention very quickly. And of course, your cartel pack giveaway announcement, why don't we get into that?
Okay, as Jedi Master Barwin just mentioned, yes, the cartel pack giveaway announcement. Some really quick details. Again, be the first to correctly answer the Star Wars trivia question posted by myself. Okay. And you have an opportunity to win a cartel pack courtesy of Swartro Reforged. All right, I usually post the question on our Facebook page and only on our Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/Swartro Reforged. All right, I'll go into more details, including last week's pool of winners, or finalists, I should say, later on in the holofeed.
Also, we have a This Is Madness update as well.
Okay, who's winning?
It's getting crazy up in here. Right now, for the light side, we have a championship match going on right now. It's Obi-Wan Kenobi versus Darth Vader.
That's the light side?
Well, light side versus dark side championship match. It's pretty much all been decided. We've come to the final match, and it's Obi-Wan versus Darth Vader.
Good news, everybody. Darth Vader won.
Spoilers, man.
There's no way Obi-Wan and his freak hairdo are going to beat Darth Vader.
Well, he's leading right now.
Shut up.
Votes are coming in. Obi-Wan Kenobi is winning 59% over 41% for Darth Vader.
What is wrong with these people? Apprentices, go fix this.
We're going to rewrite history, damn it. We're going Star Wars revisionist.
Oh, I see the problem. They got a bad picture of Lord Vader here.
Oh, should it be in his, you know, with his flowing locks of hair and, you know, going?
No, he should have definitely been there with both of his arms hacked off and throwing the Emperor into a bottomless pit. Then he would be winning.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go with that.
Apparently the live stream is saying that my mic doesn't sound too good, so I'll have to apologize for that. Unfortunately, the podcast version of this is seems to be recording all right, so we're going to have to, I guess, just go full steam ahead. So I apologize for my decreased audio, guys.
Yeah. Zach in the chat saying, due to historic events, Vader wins.
SWTOR Make Good Double XP Weekend is coming up Friday, April 11th until Sunday, April 13th, 2014. So,
yes. Oh, yeah.
Got that. That's coming up, thank God.
Going to take full advantage of that.
And, yeah, I mean, Fred... What exactly? It was a couple of weeks ago, right? Something happened, and we lost out on Double XP Weekend.
No, we just missed out on Kuat Drive Yards wasn't giving Double XP during the Double XP Weekend.
All right, that was so. Now they're doing another Double XP Weekend.
Yeah, to make up for it.
Okay, gotcha.
Awesome.
And Server Droid reminds us that on April 8th, all game servers, SWTOR.com, and the launcher will be unavailable while we perform scheduled maintenance on Game Update 2.7. Invasion will be implemented during this downtime. Details are as follows. Date, April 8th, 2014, for 5 hours from 1 a.m. Pacific to 6 a.m. Pacific. During the maintenance, all updates and additional information will be posted on our Twitter account. Thank you for your patience as we maintain service for Star Wars The Old Republic.
You know, Ival, and every week when they talk about this maintenance, I just picture that they unplug the servers and then they sit down with one box of donuts and they eat the donuts extremely slow. And then when they're done, everybody goes and takes a bathroom break and then they plug the server back in.
Yeah.
You know, it's the point that I actually almost believe that.
I mean, you'll notice they take the server down and nothing ever changes. They don't take 5 hours to plug something in and plug, you know, unplug it and then plug it back in. They don't take that long. Unless maybe you're having Bodar do it because he's kind of slow.
I didn't mean mentally.
I mean, you're slow at everything you do. The ship still isn't fixed. We're still waiting on that hyperdrive from 2 episodes ago.
Oh, we know. It gets expensive. Sometimes you can't get these things off the GTN all that quickly. Right, right, Q2?
Oh, we got a new hyperdrive out of the cartel pack that we're giving away later. That's what we do, in case you're wondering. We open them all, and then we give you the ones that have the crap stuff in them.
So, would we call the SWTOR ramen noodles? That's what we got in the pack, right?
That's what we got, yeah. Well, let's see. Let's just double-check the old holo feed here. Now, there were some interesting bits of information that that dropped this week. And apparently we're not the only ones that can make a really bad April Fool's joke, because we got this one right here that just pulled up from their news articles on SWTOR.com. Fred, why don't you do the honors on this one, and I'll see if I can get this up on the stream.
Oh, this was amazing. They posted this picture on April 1st. It says, "Be the weapon, be the asteroid. Take your asteroid to space. Who needs blaster bolts, ion cannons, or missiles when your ship itself can be the weapon? Thanks to new Zerka technology, pilots can now jump into the cockpit of the asteroid and take out their enemies head-on. Blend into the battleground and lock onto unsuspecting enemies. The asteroid specializes in tractor beams that reel their victims in. By the time the target realizes the situation, they will be blown to smithereens across the asteroid's rocky hull. More aggressive pilots will enjoy ramming into their foes with deadly accuracy. They won't know what hit them until you hit them. Pilots should keep in mind that, like the bomber, the asteroid is a big target with low maneuverability. Blending into the terrain is a necessity for survival. Since this ship rule has the strongest hull armor in Galactic Starfighter, they have no shields to protect them. Tactical gameplay is the key with the asteroid. If you enjoy ramming your starfighter into enemies and taking foes out from the shadows of space, the asteroid is the ship for you.
These pictures then, up here are pretty
then
awesome.
Then they put all the like links at the bottom that make it seem legit. Mm-hmm. For more information now, visit SwordsWar.com/Galactic Starfighter. Play free now.
Now, obviously, you can see the posting right here, April 1st, 2014. Obviously, it's an April Fool's joke.
It'd be funny if it wasn't.
It was, do you think there was a single person out there that this fooled at all?
You know someone fell for it. There's always that one person that does.
Yeah.
Well, there was that second when I first opened this. I'm like, what? And then I'm like, oh, wait, April 1st. Because, like, I saw that screenshot, and I'm like, what?
The fact they made it look so official.
Yeah, like, they actually took the time to put a door on the asteroid instead of just putting, like, pictures of asteroids.
Yeah.
You put, like, a little cockpit doorway. I gave a full-blown description of what the ship does. Like, seriously.
Yeah. I thought this was hysterical. What did they do last year? Do you remember?
I don't remember if they did anything last year.
I don't think they did.
Awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awkward. Well, let's find out real quick.
Yeah, I mean, let's see if we can get a double check that one up. Lou, what did you think of this?
Yes,
when you saw this?
They did. It's right here. It goes, Game Update 2.1, Dance of the Hutts. Game Update 2.1, Dance of the Hutts is coming in late April, allowing players to experience brand new in-game content, including a new PvP area and a new mount. The Hutt Cartel has realized that absolute power stems from the knowledge and the dancing arts. They have put out a galactic imperative to find the best dancer and promote them to majesty. In the PvP arena, Toboro's Shakedown, players must use the new dance combat skills to face off against other players for unique rewards. Players who master the PvP area, Toboro's Shakedown will earn specialized reputation points to purchase a new mount. The Huttese Transporter. The Huttese Transporter takes a 5% tax of all cartel coin purchases to ensure it's always satisfied. But don't worry. If players talk or flirt with the Huttese Transporter, it would give them a cartel coin tax break.
Noopa, noopa.
Amazing.
Yeah, I was picturing Dance Dance Revolution, but SWTOR style when I first read that.
Oh, this one's great, though. This one's great. This was the first April Fool's that they did in 2012. Live the ship droid experience.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Cruising around the galaxy in your own personal starship is an important aspect of Star Wars: The Old Republic. The player's starship is like a home, and the player's companions are like family. No one knows this better than the dedicated ship droids who maintain the vessels. Jedi Knights, smugglers, bounty hunters, and other class characters may be the heroes in the wider galaxy, but board the starship, the ship droids are the heroes. That's why, as part of Game Update 1.2, you will soon be able to assume direct control over your droid's actions with Ship Droid, a brand new minigame coming to the Old Republic. Features of the minigame include cleaning the cockpit windows, calibrating the ship's food processors, and several other exciting maintenance duties. That's really only the beginning. No Star Wars: The Old Republic minigame would be complete without the fourth pillar of story. In addition to your character's personal storyline, you can also experience the storyline of these loyal companions. In Ship Droid, TM, You will be asked to make decisions that have meaningful impact on the story and greatly affect the climate aboard your ship.
Oh my god.
They actually had a video out with that as well, and at one particular point you actually see a character in-game playing an old Star Wars game from like the early 90s.
Not only that, there's like four or five different videos on here, and there's one where somebody's strangling the crap out of the droid.
Oh,
oh boy. Yeah, good times. I remember that. I remember that it actually got me. Like, I honestly legitimately believed that one. And
you're probably like, what?
Yeah. I thought that was pretty good.
BioWare knows how to do this April Fool's thing.
Fred, what do you think about the April Fool's joke? Any thoughts?
I think it was good.
Think it was good? Yeah, not bad.
I appreciate that they at least did something for it.
Do you think they got a whole bunch of people just kind of throwing in their at their Twitter, like, what are you guys doing? You broke the game. This is BS. And it was great until now, and now you effed it up. Just getting completely crazy over it.
No, but there was a couple posts on the forums where somebody's like, is this the new ship you were talking about coming? It wouldn't be great if the joke was on us and this was legit.
This was, yeah, it was actually like asteroids exist in the game. I think you were saying off air that wouldn't it be fun if they actually, for the one day, they actually released an asteroid that you can fly.
Oh, that would have been amazing if they did.
Just to hammer home the joke.
Like, there's a little patch and like it's just in there.
Yeah. Be great. Or they put in like the skin somewhere inside the game where you download the update, where everyone just goes to go data mining and they find this and all the sites are like, oh my god, it's actually true, like we found it while data mining.
Well, one thing I remember EverQuest did on April Fool's Day, they actually patched the game, so when you log in on character select, your character would look normal, but as soon as you logged into the game, everybody was a stick figure. And wouldn't it be great if they put up this like funny blog post, and then when you actually log into Galactic Starfighter, every ship looks like an asteroid?
That would be funny.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of things that they could do. Just to give people agita over it, you know.
And the fact that they can do it with the, you know, with such ease with the game engine. Come up with these videos and official descriptions going on.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my God.
But then you know you get those people that are like, oh, I can't believe they're wasting resources doing an April Fool's joke. That could have been my operation.
The whole whiteboard just goes completely to crap now.
The wall of crazy just went to one.
Exactly.
April Fool's joke.
One April Fool's joke. All right, guys. Well, we want to thank audibletrial.com/QuestGamingNetwork for sponsoring our show in part today. audibletrial.com/QuestGamingNetwork, of course, you know, is the place where you can go to download your free audiobook today. There's so many there. Obviously, we like to make a recommendation, of course. All different kinds of genres. All tons and tons of different audiobooks are there at audibletrial.com/QuestGamingNetwork. We want to recommend, since you're a SWTOR fan, you're listening to the show, you must be a SWTOR fan, Revan. Revan, Deceived, and Annihilation. There's three books for you right there. Great books. And like I said, my last episode, my favorite part of these books is that they play more like audio dramas than really just an audiobook. Most of the time during audiobooks, people read the book out to you. But this is obviously far more. There's lots of, you know, music and ambient sounds in there, and it really sort of just fleshes the scene out and brings it to life during the reading of the book, during the narration. Fantastic stuff. Revan and Annihilation and Deceived are among our favorites. So Thanks to audibletrial.com/questgamingnetwork for sponsoring our show in part today. And of course, if you if you're into audiobooks, there's no better place than audibletrial.com/questgamingnetwork.
Funny you mentioned that, Ivorin, because nothing paints a picture in your mind like when you're listening to Revan and you hear the narrator describe that Revan's wife gets out of bed, stark naked, wraps the sheet around herself, and walks up behind Revan. And then you hear a man's voice go, "Revan, is something wrong?"
It took me a really long time to sort of just like acclimate myself to that, because
that's right in the beginning of the book.
Yeah, it's like, "I love you, Revan. I love you too."
Star Wars, The Old Republic, Revan, Prison Edition.
Gross.
Well, think about it. It's like old school Shakespeare where women couldn't be in the play.
How'd you get out of the glove box?
Get back in there, Treak.
Why does every opening on the ship connect to Ivarwin's bedroom? I think she's saying she's eating Pringles in your bed.
Oh, what is that? What does that sound?
Oh, God. I think that's Streak's shock collar.
Wait, how'd you get your hands in a shock collar?
Yeah, how'd you do that?
I'm not from the Republic. I happen to own slaves.
Well, neither am I. I can't get my hands on one.
You're pretty much Republic at this point.
I'm gonna poison.
Come here, let me see if this fits you.
Oh, no.
No.
Yep, yep. What'd you do in game this week?
Well, I played my Dark Side Sage all the way through Terrace, and I started doing the quests on Nar Shaddaa. I cleared out the Nikto sector, and I gotta say, Kazan Fess is surprisingly agreeable when you go Dark Side.
What?
Yeah, you'd be surprised how many times you get plus 30 affection for going Dark Side with them.
Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there is the occasional thing, like, if you're just being a bully, killing somebody for no reason, yeah, you lose affection with them.
You know what, though? Like, now that I think about it, I'm not 100% surprised by that, because Kaizen is always about, you know, showing your aggression and showing your strength and being, you know, just eliminating your enemies. A lot of the time, I've noticed that.
See, I don't know if I told you guys before, though. Like, I'm playing my Sage Darkside, but I'm not playing him like your stereotypical Darkside character. Mm-hmm. I'm not playing him like a complete douche to everybody. I play him Darkside because in my mind, it's like almost like the Jedi Council made him like this experiment where they want him to study the dark side of the Force, but at the same time, he's still a good person and wants to help people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in every dialogue choice, he's always sounding helpful, and then when it comes down to the dark side choice, he always makes the dark side choice. Like, there was one part, I'm not going to give any spoilers here, but there was a part where it came to this choice of to save this woman or to save these holocrons. And he saved the holocrons first, because that's the dark side choice, and as a result, the woman died. And the woman's husband was like, "Oh, you didn't save my wife." And my dude was like, "I wanted to."
But
and he's like, "Shove it, Jedi."
There goes a future Imperial trooper.
Interestingly enough, though, when you go dark side on the Sage, it doesn't feel like your character is evil when you do it that way. It just feels like he's kind of misguided. Like, he's doing what he thinks is best, but not necessarily in the way of the light.
Alright, so you figure maybe he's a good character, but he's got a mean streak in him?
Well, in my own roleplay, he was actually commissioned to study the dark side of the Force. So that's why he does the dark side choices when he has to. But he still is very nice to people. Almost after every dark side decision, he always apologizes.
So
he actually tells people he's sorry.
After he cuts off their limbs? Okay, I can see where that works.
Well, none of the dark side choices like that have been anything like that.
I know, but can you imagine? Come on.
Yeah. I think Republic Dark Side is different than Imperial Dark Side. Like, the choices themselves are drastically different.
It's more like you're just being rude and non-heroic and selfish versus just, you know, maiming and murdering left and right.
Like in Chapter 1 for the Consular, which this isn't a huge spoiler either. It comes really early in the story. You find out all these different people are suffering from this dark side plague. Well, you, as the light side Jedi, have the option to use this force technique to shield them from the plague. Or you can make the dark side decision and kill them to put them out of their misery.
Right.
So when you pick dark side, he doesn't go about it like he's just being a jerk and killing them for no reason. He does it like you don't have to suffer anymore. And then he cuts them down. Mm. And then Kaizen's like, I love it. You're killing your enemies. And by that, I mean, it's like, rah, rah,
rah, rah, rah, yeah, rah, yeah, I was going to say. Wait, if I remember correctly, don't you get Kaizen? He's not, what's your species again?
Trandoshan.
Isn't he on a hunt? Or something like that? Or some like holy quest, something like that, where he's got to go after some prey?
Not really, no.
He's after the scorekeeper trying to earn her favor.
Okay.
Yeah, he sort of has like a religious belief that's tied to, you know, a very primal version of like hunter gatherer civilization. That's basically what that's kind of like.
You know, what's really interesting about him though is I actually found out because of his affection's going through the roof with this character. He just loves that I'm killing everybody. But Kaizen actually told me that he used to be a bounty hunter with Brayden. Which, if you didn't make the connection there, Brayden is the old man that you meet right off the bat when you make a bounty hunter.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, Kaizen told me he used to be a bounty hunter with Brayden.
Oh, yeah, the guy that gets killed in the very beginning of the story.
Spoilers?
It's like the first 10 minutes of the game.
You just ruined the story for Lou.
No, I have pyrotech.
So, what else did you do in the game, Fred? Anything else?
Well, I was playing my Jedi Sentinel, coincidentally, yeah, through Terrace as well, but okay, he's going light side. And I found a Datacron that was frustrating me because I couldn't get up to it. And after like 3 hours of trying, I gave up.
Yeah, it's usually the case with Datacrons.
I'm up in this pipe.
I'm really excited to tell you that I started my Cathar Trooper today.
Named Brago?
Yeah, well, I couldn't get the name Brago, so I named it Brago Khajiit.
Do you want me to delete Brago so you can have it?
Do you have Brago? Do you have it?
No.
Aww.
I wish I did.
Aww. I started him today, and I was really having a lot of fun, even though I don't like the story for the Trooper on Ord Mantell.
It only gets worse after that.
I had you like in the back of my head telling me that earlier today while I was playing. But I liked it. I'm having fun, you know, getting into the Trooper a little bit. You know, I was trying to get him to 10 before the show, but I got him up to 6. And I remember that when you finally do get to 10, you get Jorgen as your companion. But I don't really want Jorgen as my companion. So what I did was I finally treated myself, and I got Treak. So
you call that a treat? So
well, I've been wanting to get him, and I just didn't have like a reason to get Treak.
Do you want me to hook you up with the naked tree customization?
Oh, mental bleach.
Bad Treak.
Put your clothes on, Treak.
No, thanks, Fred. No, I don't want the. But I've been wanting to get Treak, and I just haven't had like a good enough reason to get that fuzzy little menace.
Are you going to use her as a tank or a healer?
I don't know yet, actually. I'm not 100% sure, because I'm not sure what I want to do with my trooper. I kind of want to go the route of the DPS, but I like to tank, and I don't mind healing every now and again, especially like on my Sage. I have a good time healing flashpoints every now and again. So I'm really not sure. I don't know. It's just kind of like a big question mark, and I sort of like that right now. I like the fact that I'm trying to get to level 10, and as soon as I get there, I'm going to have this big question mark on do I want to, you know, go commando, giggity, or do I want to go Vanguard?
Do it.
What do I want to do? I am kind of leaning on DPS though, and what that's going to look like if I go the commando route and go the DPS tree there. You know, is that going to be cool? Is it not going to be cool? I don't know.
I would recommend that if you're not partial to tanking or healing and you want to go DPS,
mm-hmm.
I would go the actual Vanguard route, because commandos, because you have to use a assault cannon, your weapon choices are going to be very limited in this game. And as you get to a higher level, a lot of them, for whatever reason, are getting ridiculously huge, and they like clip through your body in weird ways and stuff.
So the assault cannon thing is not as crack, not as cool as it looks.
It could have been cool, but they didn't really give you a whole lot of unique skins with it.
Okay.
Whereas if you go, you know, Vanguard, you're gonna have every assault rifle in the game that you can use,
and they look pretty badass.
Maybe I'll do that then. All right. Well, let's jump on to our next point here, and then afterward we'll ask Lou what he did during the game. How about that?
Okay.
All right. So, Ninjon XB on the SWTOR forum.
Ninjon
XB on the SWTOR forums says, "Don't complain about SWTOR's content cycle." And he says, and I quote, "I recently started playing WoW again." Ugh, bad decision.
And now we move on.
So, back to the questions from before.
Oh, I kid around. I'm just joking. I recently started playing WoW again as a secondary MMO. In doing so, I remember how bad Blizzard is getting content out when they are getting ready to release an expansion pack. The last content patch that WoW got was on September 9th, 2013. At that point, we were on Content Update 2.3. Since that point, SWTOR has received 1. New daily area, Oricon. 2. 2 new raids. 3. 4v4 arenas. 4. Galactic Starfighter. 5. Tactical Flashpoints. And 6. Various class changes. On September 9th, WoW introduced flexible raids, new raid, new daily area, new battlefield, class changes. Soon, SWTOR will be getting, as of 2.7 and 2.8, Nightmare version of Dread Palace and Dread Fortress, new GSF map, new war zones, new flashpoints, player housing. Plus all the stuff we know yet about 2.8 and beyond, including the Mekeb-sized expansion, in quotes. The next WoW expansion is going to be big, but they basically shut down development of any new content for WoW for close to a year, depending on when it launches, since we only know by the end of the year, to get the expansion out. And the expansion will be $60. So before anyone complains about the pace of SWTOR getting content out, maybe you should look at how WoW treats their subscribers when they're about to release a $60 expansion.
That is unreal.
Or ever. That's how WoW always treats your subscribers. They put out content and then, okay, we'll see you guys in 6 months.
Yeah, I sort of want to call out the fact that if World of Warcraft came out today, it would be a fail. I mean, you can't get away with crap like that anymore in the MMO industry.
Yeah, well, first off, I mean, one of the big things that sticks out my mind is the fact that they're charging you full standard retail price for a new game, for an expansion.
Yeah. I'm not saying that to sort of, you know, upset and piss off some of our listeners who may be playing, you know, World of Warcraft and all that. I'm just sort of saying, I'm sort of outlining that when in 2004, when World of Warcraft first came out, and it started basically the popularization of the MMO genre, at least from my observation, I don't know if that's true or not, but it looked like from my point of view, that's what happened. It's kind of they're sort of relying on an outdated model, which is the reason why a lot of people are saying when an MMO comes out, they don't want it to play like they don't want it to be the in quotes WoW clone. So I sort of feel like if WoW were to debut these days, it wouldn't do well at all. It wouldn't shut down, but it would go free to play very, very, very quickly. And I think one of the reasons that people sort of call out when they have an MMO that they're playing and they are upset by it is updates. That updates aren't coming out nearly as quickly, and it seems like WoW's still doing their updates very slowly, and meanwhile we've got these other games like SWTOR where updates are pretty consistent.
Well, I think part of the thing is when WoW first came out, it was the big kid on the block. There wasn't a whole lot of competitors for WoW. So people were playing WoW, getting invested in their characters. So, you know, 10 years later, or however long it's been now, people are still playing the same characters they were playing 10 years ago. So they're invested in their characters, and they don't want to start over.
Yeah.
So people tolerate that stuff. But I mean, with a game like SWTOR, when SWTOR first launched, people were complaining about how long it was taking them to come out with new content. That was one of the reasons why SWTOR was bleeding subscribers so fast right off the bat, was because they couldn't put content out fast enough for people.
Yeah.
And that's when they decided to step up their game and say, okay, we're going to have this 6-week cadence where we're going to have updates every 6 weeks. And then here we are, you know, a couple years later, it's up to 9 weeks. And probably next year it'll be 11 or 12 weeks. But basically, they have to put a commitment out there that they're going to put out content every so often. WoW doesn't give any sort of promise. And they don't have to, because WoW could go a year without updating and still keep the base of its player base.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
And that's what they do.
And that's one thing I just don't understand, is like that kind of mentality where it's not tolerated anywhere else, but you know, with World of Warcraft it is. And I see your reasoning, Fred, but still, you know, if you're going to apply that to other games, yet not apply it to the one you're, I guess, so-called champion or just, you know, defending, you know, you really have the argument, because if you're going to complain about one game's content and then just basically take the beating from another one, okay, and paying a subscription on top of that, you know, where does your argument stand now? Well,
I'm a firm believer, though, that a lot of people do the opposite of what Ninja on here is doing, and they play WoW, and when WoW is in these content lulls, that's when they come play games like SWTOR and ESO and every other new game that comes out. And then when WoW puts out a content patch, they go back to WoW.
Right. Right. I guess they use that time, that lull, as their time to experience other games.
Yeah. I've seen that myself. In fact, I've been sort of a part of that. You know, all those a couple of weeks ago, I was sort of calling out all the MMOs that I happen to have just stockpiled here, and a lot of those I purchased when World of Warcraft was sort of on a lull for me, with the exception of Rift. I got that a couple of months after Cataclysm had debuted, and I still hadn't gotten through a lot of the content in Cataclysm, and I picked up Rift, and I never looked back.
Cataclysm was a horrible expansion for a while.
I don't know about that.
It wasn't one of the good ones.
It became bad when they nerfed a lot of the dungeons that they debuted with. A lot of people were saying these dungeons are really too.
Yeah,
they were too difficult, and then they nerfed it, and then it got bad.
When WoW went downhill for me was when they killed Arthas. Because the whole story was about getting to Arthas, and then they killed him.
It sort of jumped the shark for me, yeah. It definitely did. But hey, SWTOR, right? So, well, so shouldn't we be glad that, you know, of all the things that do happen with Star Wars The Old Republic, I think this gentleman here, he or she, maybe female, the lady, Ninjon XB here. Sort of saying that, hey guys, you know what, don't complain about the content cycle because there's worse out there, and he sort of batters World of Warcraft, but I'm sure there's other games out there that, you know, do it far worse than World of Warcraft, and we should be at least a little happy with, hey, you know, Star Wars The Old Republic, for what it is, it does a lot of awesome things, and the content cycle may not be as bad as we think.
Well, I mean, if anything, at least we know what's coming up. They've given us, you know, a pretty decent amount of information. I mean, look at the list that's coming up. Okay, of course, class changes, class balancing is always, you know, that's a no-brainer. That's always going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, every year, you know, there are going to be class tweaks. You know, more tactical flashpoints. They know KDY was an experiment, and it worked. You know, I'm sorry, it works. You know, it's a hell of a lot of fun. It gets all the player base, more of the player base, playing together overall. You know? And, of course, the updates to Galactic Starfighter, because, you know, I know you and I, you know, when we do it, we don't think of it as PvP, even though it is. It really is. It is a space arena. You think about it. You know, bashing each other with your, you know, instead of your skills, you're just using your fighters. And shooting the crap out of each other.
Mm.
Okay? And, of course, the two new raids are coming up. Dread Palace, Dread Fortress, the Dailies area on Oricon, and what's the other one? The Zerka area, too, as well, right? Zerka... Gosh, what's that zone name again?
Are you talking about KDY?
No, not KDY. The other one, the other place with the dailies, the Zerka area for dailies. Because we have Oricon.
I know what you're talking about, too.
Yeah.
Like, are you talking about the black hole?
No. That's on. There's that other area, I think, in the same space zone as Ilum.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, is that Zerka Daily? Yeah, Zerka 198. Thanks, Revit.
Okay.
All right.
I haven't even done those dailies.
Yeah, it should. It's just, hey, good way to get, you know, rep and money. So, you know, some people, their death cycle may be slow or slowing down. But from what I see, at least what we're getting, to me, yes, it may be a little slow in coming, but in the end, it's going to be worth the wait because of, you know, how much fun we, you know, players have had, you know, with this content when it does release. I mean, I, for one, you know, I'm psyched. We're getting player housing. Okay? I like it. I mean, it's a lot of players that might be fluff, but you know what? It's something cool and it's different.
Yeah.
Okay? And, of course, the Raiders, they get that nightmare version of Dread Palace, Dread Fortress, and I'm sure they're itching to break that content as fast as they can.
Oh, of course.
You know? And plus the way it ends. I mean, there's a lot of stuff they didn't tell us beyond 2.8, and what, you know, it's only April.
Yeah, there's more coming.
Exactly, and they've said that there's more coming. They said they've gone, what, up as far as what, the player housing, and that's it. And then they gave us hints that hit for that mech size expansion that's still coming. Mm-hmm. So we have no clue what lies beyond that, and it could be a veritable storm of content they throw our way for the rest of the year.
Well, let's keep it here with Lou for a few minutes, and let's ask what have you done in game this week?
This week.
This is a challenging week for all of us. I'll tell you that.
Yes, it has been, but you know, still had some time. I actually recreated my Sage character because initially I got a Sage character, up to 10,
mm-hmm.
got to the fleet, and I wanted to change initially. You know, I had never done any of the DPS classes for either the Jedi Counselor or the Inquisitor.
Really?
All right. So I was like, you know what? Let me try that. Let me try it at least on the Republic side first. I wanted to try a new Republic character.
Did you do the Inquisitor?
No. I did the Shadow for a bit. Okay, maybe got to level 11
mm-hmm.
on it, and then you know I thought to myself, you know what? I really do want to see the healing part because I did. I know my sorcerer is a healer.
Mm-hmm.
On the Imperial side, so I figured, you know what? Let me try healing on the Republic side because I have no experience in that. Because on the Imperial side, I had my operative, and she's specced for heals, all right. And I had my Sith sorcerer, and she's specced for heals.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured I've done it on this side. Let me try and see how it is on the Republic side. So I figured, what the heck?
Right.
You know, she's only level 11. It's no big deal. So I'll just move all the stuff that I earned and put it in the bank. It's one of the characters. I don't lose that.
Okay.
So
how'd it go?
Did they? And right now I'm in the middle. I'm still on Tython. Okay. So I got her up to level 7.
Okay.
So I'm just gonna wait, and then when I finally get to the fleet, I am going to go Sage, and I'm gonna try it, and I'm gonna see how many pebbles I can throw.
There you go.
Later
on. That's how you do it.
I can't wait to get that ability. Love that ability. It's like, wow, I'm in the middle of a metal space station, and I'm finding rocks.
You're hurling rocks left and right.
Hurling rocks. I don't know where they're coming from, but damn, what a skill this is.
Well, interestingly enough, Lou, your majority of your damage won't come from throwing rocks. When you're Sage and you're using your DPS abilities, you actually throw like force waves at people.
Oh, cool. My own comment. Ha, ha, ha.
That's what I was talking about last week when I was saying about throwing nothingness at people and it damaging them.
My Sage Abby is getting to that point now where she's just, hurling like waves of energy at people. And it's starting to get pretty cool because, Swotor pebbles left and right is just,
No, just
not where you want to be for the whole game.
Do you remember when we first saw that when the game debuted? I think you and I literally stopped and laughed.
Oh, yeah.
Because we couldn't believe what we were seeing. Like, what the hell is that?
And then you look at the other side of it with the Inquisitor, and he's like, he's got the Force Lightning, and I love that Force Lightning. As light side and Republic as I am.
The Jedi got chatted on that one.
Definitely.
They got a really crappy animation.
Oh, without a doubt. I think they did the best that they could under the circumstances, but it's definitely...
Yeah, they got to try to stick on that one.
Absolutely.
They did.
Without a doubt.
Oh.
Definitely the pebbles they got shafted on, but I would argue that Force Stasis is almost just as cool as Force Choke.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you on that at all. It's definitely... It's comparable.
It is, but then, nothing beats seeing your target just floating in midair and going... No, come on.
It would be nice if they had programmed it so the character would be in a stasis if you were a light side character and a choke if you were dark side.
I think what needs to happen is we need to have a little force stasis in the next movies coming up to sort of popularize it because everyone loves force choke because of Darth Vader in the movies because it's just so badass. But if you think about it, force stasis, the way it happens in the game, it's just as badass. I mean, the whole body levitates. The person is stiff in the air, can't possibly move. He's radiating just, force wave all over his body, and he's just paralyzed standing there. And if they had that in the movie, like let's just say, some Jedi's just walking down the halls doing this unbelievable fight, and then some guy comes up with a blaster rifle, and he just kind of points his hand in the air, and the guy just drops his rifle and levitates up, and he's just like, you know, shaking, convulsing in the air like you see in the game, and then he just, you know, has a lightsaber battle with somebody else and then drops the other dude to the floor. Like, that would be completely badass.
yeah, that would.
Force stasis is one person and then turns around and force lifts another so they can't do anything.
Right.
That would be cool.
How cool would that be?
Lift looks cooler too than the Inquisitor version, because they get trapped in lightning and just spin around.
Yeah. Yeah. It does. Yeah. It absolutely does. I like my Inquisitor. I don't get to play my Inquisitor very much. But when I do, I just, oh man, it's a lot of fun. It really, really is. I like him far more than not the Guardian.
Sage?
No.
Consular?
The
Sentinel?
The Sith?
Warrior.
Thank you.
We named every class in the game.
The Scoundrel. The Trooper.
I do think, though, that the male Inquisitor is one of the better male voice actors in the game.
He's all right.
His voice just fits the character.
Speaking on the voice acting, it does. Speaking on the voice acting, though, I mean, it's very jarring for me to play a Cathar and have the voice actor in there. I don't know what it is. It's just the Cathar seems... it doesn't seem like you should have a robust voice come from it. It's just a very strong, presence-filled voice that comes from the Trooper. And then when you play a Cathar as a Trooper, it's like, whoa.
That just doesn't fit.
Why is this guy a Trooper? He belongs on radio. some holo recording.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
The Cathar.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to building that guy up a little bit. All right. Well, on to our next point of discussion here, which let's see. Back here. And this one comes from the SWTOR forums. From Mace the Ace.
That's Mace's second appearance on our show.
Can we? Yeah, it is.
Well, you know what? He asked damn good questions.
Can we have just one server? Fred.
Mace says, is one mega server for the game possible? I would like that, especially when strongholds come. Can you imagine that? Being able to raid with anyone no matter what time of the day? Because it will always be evening time somewhere, and the people in that country will be playing. Finally, also, you'd get planets that always have low populations during the time you can play would have a lot more people. I don't know what the technical limitations are, if there are any, but it would kind of be awesome, don't you think? When you log in, your character will be placed at the server location nearest to you to ensure the fastest connection. However, you will be able to link up with people from anywhere or jump to their version. I know ESL are using the one mega server approach, and I know that these current servers are a merger of the old ones. If they can consolidate all those old realms into our current servers, is it not possible to consolidate all of our current realms into one? I can imagine my latency will drop significantly if I kept connected to realms on actual servers that were near me. I am almost salivating low latency and the 200 to 300 DPS gain that will give me. You may wonder why I don't transfer all my tunes to a server that is near my physical location. Well, I have 10 tunes to do so, and I can't really afford to send over. Plus, got my guilds and all my friends on this one. Now with a mega server, that would be no worry. I doubt I would know exactly the location my tune was running from, but I wouldn't care. Kiss no ranked arena / war zones or no group finder queue pops in the morning, which happens to be the only time you can play because of work or life commitments. Goodbye.
You'd be able to do your ranked arenas and war zones and any group activities and always have a group ready. Is it 4 a.m. in your country or time zone? Now you want to start a Red Fortress hard mode? No longer is it a ghost town because everyone is asleep or tired. You'd have some people, it's prime time, or for some people, just back from school. Wouldn't it be awesome?
Well, let's get this out. Obviously,
let me introduce you to a comma mace. Use punctuation. Someone can understand what you're trying to ask.
You know, I imagine Bradford right now is just twitching, going, "Oh my god, I need to fix this."
Yeah, Bradford's. If you ever have a question about the English language, who do you call? Bradford.
Brad, we appreciate your questions, but can you not word them as a damn run-on sentence? You're back in the glove box.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What'd you say to me?
Oh, yeah,
yeah. Oh, Fred.
Oh, well.
Shut up. Wow, that's how the Empire rules.
So, I know Elder Scrolls Online sort of popularized this idea of the mega server. It's been, whenever you talk about a mega server the last maybe year or so, really just like the last year, I think, it's been synonymous with Elder Scrolls Online. But they built their game with that in mind, and they've built their service with this mega server in mind. Even with a mega server, they have different regions. They've got a European mega server. They've got a North American mega server. You know, BioWare didn't do that for Star Wars The Old Republic. And even though this sounds like a fantastic idea on paper, I don't think, A, that it would be possible for BioWare to even do this. And even if it were possible, I don't think that the way they built the game would accommodate a mega server at all. So, great idea, but I don't necessarily know if it's even possible. And if it were, I don't think it would go off in the way that Mace the Ace here is sort of conceiving it in their mind. What do you think, Lou?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Elder Scrolls Online, you know, from the get-go, they were going to use the mega server concept. Yeah. Okay, that was their model. Everyone on one server. Okay, and they have a one mega server for the North American players and one for the European players. But, you know, everyone's free to choose whatever server they want to play on. So if you're in America, if you want to play on a European server, you can, and vice versa. But the key point is there that Avaron just mentioned is the fact that they designed that game from the get-go with that in mind. So everything that they've done in the game, that they've developed for the game, totally integrates and works with the mega server. But Mace the Ace also has a point to where, yes, it was, you know, with the server merges that SWTAR has undergone, the past year or so. Yeah, I think technically they could do it. However, I don't know if it's possible. Like, I don't know what kind of logistical and programming nightmare that would be to have now, even if they wanted to be generous, say, you know what, we'll just consolidate everyone onto one PvE server, one PvP server, and one RP server, you know? So now I have just three servers, if that makes sense. Okay, all the PvE servers would now be on one mega PvE server. All the PvP servers will be on their own, and then one roleplay server.
Yeah, you got all these different servers. CS Barry here in the chat room is saying, and within all of these servers, PvP is further broken up into separate servers as well. So it's not like you log into Jedi Covenant and everything that you do in that game is based off of that one Jedi Covenant server.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got you do have a PvP server. I believe the operations are held on a completely different server, as well as the flashpoints as well.
Right. Yeah, because that's how they're built. You know, they're built as instance portions of the game.
Right.
But again, you'd also have to tell the player community that was so used to its one, I guess, one rule set, like the role players. Okay, isn't there a role playing PvP server as well in Tor?
I think there was. I don't know. I haven't made a character
right
where I've had to choose my server in a long time. So I think I remember there being like one or two out there when the game first launched. I know there was some crazy combos.
Yeah, there was at one point. I'm not sure if they're still around.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but then again. But since, you know, the game, when it launched, had those different rule sets in mind, now if you want to introduce a mega server concept, you'd have to tell everyone, okay, now you're all going to be the same server, whether you're PvE or RP/PvE. Okay, same thing with the PvP server. You're PvP, now you're RP, PvP, now you're all on one server. Because now you're going to have both communities that, you know, normally didn't see each other, encounter each other because they're on different rule sets. Now it's like, all right, now PvE you have to deal with people going off role-playing mode, okay? Whether on the PvE server, PvP servers, and, you know, you may find players who don't agree with that sort of style of play, or, you know, it annoys them. So, can you imagine what the... Well, people get used to it, but imagine the first couple of weeks of people just trying to get used to each other.
Well.
You know, it would be a rough transition, but in the end, it would work itself out, but man... Those first two throughs would be gold. Just for watching drama.
What do you think, Fred, on some of this?
I don't think that it would be good for SWTOR right now to do that. I think that their best approach would be to find a way to come up with cross-server grouping without actually merging all the servers together. Because think about Ilum, for instance. They couldn't even get it to the point where you could have more than 16 people fighting in an area without it lagging and breaking the game for people.
Yeah.
The way that the game's built, I don't see it ever being able to support everybody that plays SWTOR being in one area at the same time, even with their different phases. And plus, like, the way that ESO does it, characters are phased out a lot of the time from other players, to the point where even when you group up with people, you have to constantly travel to the area that they're in because you're separated.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And the way SWTOR is, you might have a couple phases of a planet going, but you know, yeah, you might have a 50-50 chance of zoning into the phase your friend's in. When it's an ESO type system, you're almost never going to zone into the same phase your friends in. You're always going to have to travel to each other.
Yeah, when you group up, you in Elder Scrolls Online, you definitely got to put in your mind that you're probably going to have to use the Way Shrine system in order to even phase into your party. So, again, all things that obviously were not thought about when building Star Wars: The Old Republic. So. I just don't think it was... even if they did find a way to make it work, it would probably turn the game into some, you know, horribly playing piece of garbage that no one would ever want to play.
Right. Because it could be... I mean, if they wanted to do it, I mean, I think the risks, if it fails, would be maybe cost prohibitive. Because then if they really wanted to do it, I mean, all the money they had to funnel to invest in that kind of technology to begin with, to create the mega servers.
Yeah.
And then... You know, you've always got to have the backup plan. So you know they have to maintain that bank of servers where it's back to being broken out. Like, you know, we have, you know, Prophecy of the Five. We still have Jedi Covenant. We still have, you know, Bergeron. Just in case, you know.
Yeah.
And then migrating players' data back to those, back and forth. Wow. I don't even want to imagine what that would be like.
Well, On to our other sponsors. Hey, you know what? SWTOR Reforged is a Quest Gaming Network production, and there's many, many, many people here that not only make this show, but make all of the other wonderful shows here at QGN. So shout out to to all those other shows here at QGN. Rift Off the Record records Sunday at 7 p.m. and Totally Heroes records Mondays at 10 p.m. Elder Scrolls Off the Record Thursdays at 7 and Classic Elder Scrolls Night Friday at 9. And then we've got Community Game Night at Saturday at 9 p.m. All of these record live at twitch.tv/QuestGamingNetwork. And you can catch all of those shows in their recorded form at youtube.com/QuestGamingNetwork. So big shout out and thank you to everyone here at the QGN family who, through their efforts, hard work, and support SWTOR Reforged. And also to tweakedaudio.com. Big shout out to Bruce, the owner of tweakedaudio.com, whom sent me these brand new pair of classic mic earbuds. My favorite pair. He found out that my bad cat Brago, he tore into my mic'd classic black earbuds last week, and he sent me he saw this on Twitter, of course. If you follow me at Avarwin on Twitter, he saw the picture of my torn asunder earbuds, and he sent me an email saying, so it looks like you need a new pair of earbuds.
You did get them. Okay, awesome.
I got them. So I said, yes, Bruce, thank you. I absolutely do need a pair because my cat tore into these, and unfortunately. We had a laugh over email about it. And, you know, we say a lot of things about Tweaked Audio. A lot of it sounds like crap, but it's really 100% true. We wouldn't allow Tweaked Audio to sponsor us, which is the truth, by the way. We allow our sponsors to sponsor us. We don't go and just throw ourselves out there and say, hey guys, look for money, you want to sponsor it? No, we don't do that. We go out there and say, we like your product, we've tested it, and we would like for you to sponsor us. And they get back to us and say yes or no. Tweaked Audio is one of the people that said yes, and the reason why we like their product is for a lot of reasons. They have quality earbuds. They're extremely durable, and they sound great. And right here on the back of the package, it says that Tweaked Audio is less like earbuds and more like an in-head audio system. Let's see if I can get that right up there on the...
I like that.
You like that, right? It's true,
we
though.
We wouldn't let them sponsor us if we didn't need their money.
Well, we don't actually get their money. it's really not how that works. what does work is their product. It is fantastic. They sound great. And you get 30% off. If you go to tweakedaudio.com and you purchase their headphones, it starts at $15, I believe. $20 around the night. It's somewhere around there. Let's just say $20. Their earbuds start around $20. They go up to about $40, and then they have a set which are very much like the Turtle Beach headset. Kind of, it's a full headset, goes completely over the ear. The Eddies, those are about $80. They have a nice wide variety of product to choose from, so you choose what fits best for you. These fit directly inside your ear. They're less expensive ones. The ones are about $20. They go on top of your ear. Those are Fred's favorite. Every one of these delivers extremely awesome audio clarity. They're highly durable. And you can get them for 30% off, but you need our code. That code is Off the Record. You put that into tweakedaudio.com, and you get 30% off your earbuds. And the savings don't stop there either. You also get free shipping. Worldwide free shipping, and as these pair right here can attest to, fantastic customer service. The owner of the company sent me a free pair of Tweaked Audio earbuds, not because he and I are the best buds ever, which, you know, we barely know each other, unfortunately. but because he really does believe in very good customer service, and he delivers on clearly. He delivers Fantastic product and fantastic service. So big shout out to Bruce and Tweaked Audio for my brand new earbuds. I love them. Thank you very much. Thank you for your service, for your customer service. And thank you to you out there who are going right now to tweakedaudio.com to purchase your earbuds for 30% off with our code Off the Record.
I picture at the Tweaked Audio office, they have a giant graph where they mark every time your cat destroys your earbuds, so they figure out about every 3 or 4 months they need to send you another pair automatically.
We're like up to like 3 or 4 times at this point.
Per year.
Wow. Yeah. It's so predictable. It's every quarter. He's going to need a new pair, folks.
It's amazing. Every time Yvonne needs a birthday gift for somebody, his cat tears up his earbuds. Wow. Hey, Mom, I got you some earbuds.
Oh, that's so nice of you. They were free.
Don't tell them that part.
Yeah, exactly. What they don't know.
These are $40 earbuds before the code Off the Record.
There's two reasons. There's two reasons why I'm thinking about skipping over the Star Wars recommendations this week.
Uh-huh.
Number one...
No, actually, it's number two.
Number one, because I have forgotten to do this again this week. I actually don't have a recommendation. That's number one. But number two, because of this, this is Fred's Star Wars recommendation of the week. It's a damn toilet seat. Fred, would you please explain yourself?
Well, wait, if we're skipping the recommendation, I'm doing this next week.
No, I'm joking. I'm joking.
All right. I happen to find the most amazing vinyl decal you could possibly find for a toilet seat. Why don't you tell them what it says, Yvorwin?
Well, it's Admiral Akbar. Okay, and right above his name says, it's a crap.
It's a crap.
It's a crap. Which goes, which is placed unceremoniously onto your ship throne. Right underneath the lid to your toilet seat.
And you'll be happy to know this is apparently handmade.
Oh, my goodness.
You
and
can,
it looks like it.
You can get this on Etsy.com. That's ETSY.com.
It's a crap.
It's a crap toilet vinyl decal for $12.99. You, too, can have Admiral Akbar every single time you open up your lid to take care of some Jedi business. Shouting out, it's a crap!
It's a poo. We need the poo bear. We need the poo bear.
You get to make your own deposit of Bantha Poodoo in your very own Admiral Akbar.
Poodoo! Seat. And Lou, on to yours. What do we have here, Lou?
Well, how do I top that now?
When you miss, General Akbar shows the dark side corruption. His eyes turn yellow.
Or he turns darker. Oh, well, we gotta stop this train. We gotta stop the ship. All right, this week I am recommending Star Tours: The Adventure Continues. And as we know, well, this is the little description here. Star Tours: The Adventure Continues. Feel the power of the Force during a 3D motion simulated space flight that launches you into the world of Star Wars. And I am recommending this because I actually had gone to Star Tours a long time ago, after some friends and I had graduated from college. We were like, hey, you know what, let's go away, it's summer break, you know, we're done, what are we going to do? Hey, let's go to Florida. We went to the happiest place on earth, and we went to Disney, and you know, we were all Star Wars fans, so we're like, figured, why the heck not? Mm-hmm. right? And then seeing that walker when you first get there, I was like, that is so cool. Seeing that model out there. Took many a photo of that, and you know, there's a bunch of things to do there. And I'm saying it now is because I think they updated the actual experience. Okay, they renamed it now. It's officially named Star Tours: The Adventure Continues, and they've done more things to it to where there's more things to experience during that part. Like, for example, one of the things they mention here is called new and different adventures. Okay. And as per the little description here, it says, with over 50 story combinations, Star Tours: The Adventure Continues invites you to experience a unique adventure almost every time. For example, some destinations you can visit, the Wookiee's homeworld of Kashyyyk. All right, you can explore the underwater realms of Naboo. You can see and experience the bustling city planet of Coruscant. And yes, our favorite dirtball, Tatooine. yes, go virtually freeze your butt off in the icy landscape of Hoth. And, something Fred would like to have orbiting this planet, the Death Star. I think this is a really, really great thing to experience down there because it appeals to the kid in all of us. I know that's always been said, but my God, if you're a Star Wars fan, I don't care if you're 2 years old or you're 90. When you actually do this tour, it is so much fun. Okay, especially when you have, other tourists or other folks down there visiting who may not have, they're really not into Star Wars or they've seen the movies or they've read the books, but whatever. And they really get in there; they're so psyched, and they all come out so happy they went to this tour because it is just a lot of fun, right? Because the tour, the people with you during your tour make it a lot more fun too because you see their reactions; you react to each other,
right? Well, this is at Disney's Hollywood Studios at Echo Lake. And there you go. Star Tours, The Adventure Continues. Very good.
Flush.
It's a crap. Lou! The Jedi Archives. Are we ready, sir, to present The Killix, Part 1?
Yes, indeed. All right, so this week we are going to present The Killix, Part 1, Insect, Sentient, Hive-Minded. Or, in a quick little quote I picked up from C-3PO to Han Solo, "I don't believe these are bugs, Captain Solo. They appear to be sentient hybrid of Coleoptera and Hymenoptera, which often use complex dances as a means of communication." And if you're like me, and like Hansel, you probably had to read that several times to actually understand what C-3PO was saying. So, who are the Killix? Killix, they refer to themselves as the Kind. They were a sentient insectoid species native to Alderaan. They built large mound-like structures on the plains of both Alderaan and Alsaken. Long before most of the species came to these worlds, the Killix vanished. The disappearance of Alderaan was depicted in Ob Kader's moss painting, Killix Twilight. As a species, Killix vary greatly in size, form, and function, though all shared a similar genetic code. Killix were a genetically diverse population of intelligent insects, with their society being composed of hives that were known as nests. Each nest had its members sharing the same physical characteristics. In addition, they possessed the ability to communicate through each other through a variety of means that included pheromones, electromagnetic transmissions, and also long-distance telepathy. This pheromonal telepathic communication allowed Killix to communicate with one another. This aura-based form of communication made use of multiple methods that included heat, electrical, magnetic, and probably chemical. Killix pheromones had an added impact on the species as they were able to alter the basic structure of the corpus callosum. Part of your brain. These changes allowed joiners to receive signal impulses directly from the brains of Killix. The transfer agent was believed to be made through auras. The Killix were social insects and came in several different types: Mambrosia givers, warriors, attendants, and the deadly assassin bugs. Some Kilix were as large as starships, whilst others, such as Fingerlings, were as small as mites. Force sensitivity was found in some types of Kilix. Though the species as a whole was not force sensitive, certain types of Kilix could be bred to use the force in simple ways. The species possessed a strong, chitinous exoskeleton that was glossy and greenish, with their carcasses capable of surviving thousands of years of erosion as seen by the colonists of Alderaan. The exoskeleton also contained a number of spiracles which served as their way of breathing. This system was capable of being poisoned by the use of insecticide grenades which forcibly closed the spiracles, resulting in the Kilix's death. Whilst Kilix were difficult to take alive, a special neutralizer agent was capable of allowing the creature to become docile and submissive. Typically, these human-sized hive creatures had four arms, with each ending in a powerful three-fingered claw. In addition, they stood on two stout legs that appeared to be capable of leaping great distances. All Kilix started as small larvae. After that, their size could vary, though a hive was usually one size. It was noted that the majority of the Kilix race were females, with a few males who only left when a new nest needed to be made. Furthermore, a single Kilix was able to lay 1,000 eggs in a month, with those eggs turning into battle-ready nymphs within a year, and by 2 years' time, the survivors were capable of laying their own eggs. This gave them a high reproductive rate, allowing them to create millions of their kinds in a short frame of time, as long as there were adequate resources. The kind were not born, but rather, when an egg was dropped, a chrysalis was spun that led to a metamorphosis into adulthood. As most Kilix were female, the males were only needed for reproduction, with little else needed of them. They were only birthed in great numbers in order to help seed a new nest. A breeding female, on the other hand, had a more important role, as they laid 1,000 eggs per month, which in turn hatched into larvae that grew into work-ready nymphs in under a year. And here we go into a brief history. This is a quote from Harry Saldonia. The Kilix left no other artifacts, no tools, machines, no vehicles, no possessions. Or, in the future, from Jason Solo. The Kilix are tied to the history of the galaxy in a way we don't understand yet. They were living in cities before humans learned to build, and they were a civilization before the Sith were spawned. They were here when Centerpoint and the Maw were constructed, and they were driven from Alderaan by the beings who did it. So, the history. As mentioned before, the Kilix were an ancient species in the pre-Republic era, who originated from their spawn world of Alderaan. They were known to have shared the galaxy in these early times with numerous other races, such as the Celestials, the Gree, the Kwa, Sharu, the Kalamai, Tong, and humans. These original insectoid inhabitants of Alderaan spread across the planet and entered neighboring star systems millennia before the foundation of the Galactic Republic. Prior to 35,000 years before the Battle of Yavin, the spectacularly powerful Celestials were dominant in the galaxy and conscripted the insectoid Kilix as laborers and exploited them in this role. A period that was dormant in the Kilix hive memory was of the Great Migration, where their species departed the homeworld and spread into the stars whilst the remaining remained on Ouroboro. Kilix slave laborers were seated up and down the Perlemain during this time. The architects, namely the son and daughter, were known to have directed the hives and providing them the knowledge to build wonders such as the Whirlpuller, Still a Curtain, and the Chasm of Forever. It was believed that they had a hand in the construction of Centerpoint Station, which they called Kolarlak, and witnessed the birth of other celestial wonders such as the Maw, Black Hole Cluster, along with the Voltar System. The Thurut Hive was noted to have known the reason for the formation of the Carillion system, which they referred to as the Five Rocks. Kilix were believed to have held some unknown tie to the Vulagul race, who hated and feared the insectoid aliens. Researchers believe that these creatures were perhaps brought to Alderaan millennia ago by the Kilix and driven to the brink of extinction when they were forced to work on the Hive Mounds. Others, however, claim that the Vulagul were descendants of Kilix joiners that were mutated and later forced from the nests. According to the Kilix, an unspecified act by the kind had led to the Celestials' anger, and in response, they emptied Ouroboro of their number. Helix slaves were also present and involved in the construction of the sinkhole station, with the Thurid Hive being responsible for the imprisonment of the entire entity known as Avaloth. By 30,000 years before the Battle of Yavin, the Celestial's influence had waned, which allowed the upstart Rakata to rise into power. During this time, an incursion by Kilix engulfed the planet Korriban, but was driven off by the native Sith. By this point, the Kilix vanished from the known galaxy and were relocated to unknown regions, which was an act presumed to be attributed to the Celestials. With the absence of the Celestials, the Kilix had abandoned the civilized galaxy, where they left nothing behind but their hive mounts on Alderaan, along with similar such structures on nearby Alsaken. A theory made by Luke Skywalker claimed that around this era, the Kilix had devoured all the resources of the homeworld of Ouroboro. Afterwards, they attempted to lay claim to other planets that did belong to them. As a result, the Celestials intervened and drove the Kilix into the unknown regions. According to a Shistavanen legend, sometime during this period, a Kilix Sith lord lived in exile on the planet Sarifor after being driven off Alsaken. When human colonists discovered Alderaan 27,500 years before the Battle of Yavin, all they discovered were the empty spires of the long-vanished species that once inhabited the world. By this point, the Kilix had long migrated into deep space for unknown reasons. The only evidence of their existence were the empty hive mounds. The colonists' arrival on Alderaan discovered a verdant world that was abandoned by the insect species. All trace of this long-vanished alien race was dirt mounds in the castle lands. These empty constructions would ignite the imaginations of artists who created framed works of art that was inspired by the Lost Kilix, which included the most famous painting known as Kilix Twilight. It was discovered that each successive generation of Kilix showed degrading levels of technological sophistication. Thus, it seemed that the Alderaanian Kilix had lost their ability to function together as a hive organism, with their society descending into chaos. The Alderaanian colonists, in turn, came to a world that was littered with the debris of the Kilix civilization. The pre-Alderaanian colonization history of the planet remained lost except within the hive mind of the insectoid Kilix. Meanwhile, the colony that had departed to deep space sought out a new homeworld for themselves but were unable to find a suitable planet. This led to the lost kin separating into 1,000 nests which went their different paths. These departed Kilix nests retreated to their own regions where they remained on a handful of isolated planets for 30 millennia. The Old Republic Era. Or in a quote from Reland Stalos. Legend has it that Kilix once ruled the planet. Supposedly, most flew to the stars. But how many remain in hibernation? In truth, a few Kilix had remained behind the Alderaan, where they lived in hibernation deep underground. Every few hundred years, these Kilix emerged and came into conflict with the colonists before retreating, whereupon they entered into their slumber once more. Alderaanians view the Kilix as monsters out of legend, though none knew how the Kilix view the human inhabitants of Alderaan. Among the most legendary hive known to the Alderaanians was the Black Hive. These hibernating groups of nests located underneath beneath the castle lands were completely unaware of the fate of the lost nests that departed their homeworld, with even the reason for their departure long being forgotten. All that was known was that a primal memory of the Exodus was present within the hive mind. These hibernating Kilix only emerged to the surface every few hundred years and came into conflict with the Alderaanian colonists that now occupied the planet. The people of Alderaan also established the Order of Extermination at some point that was tasked with eliminating the Kilix threat whenever it emerged. The Ouroboros once again awoke during the Cold War era, where they were engaging the Alderaanians during the conflict that emerged over the planet's throne between the noble houses. In this time, House Ulgul also learned a means of controlling Kilix to serve the military forces, which was achieved through a site known to the Hive as the Pain Factory, where they tortured Kilix in order to lead them to swarm against the House's enemies. Science Commander Keikana Hera tasked an agent with destroying the Pain Factory and desired to use the data to control the Kilix for the Republic's cause. Dr. Perrin intended to study a live Kilix specimen as part of her attempts at learning to domesticate the insectoid species. The Imperial Science Bureau's Project Protean were interested in the Kilix and had Vector Hylus of the Imperial Diplomatic Service purposely transformed into a joiner to study the effects of the process. Attempts were also made at using specialist weapons against the emerging Killix, such as the Mother's Milk Poison and Blood Boiler. In addition, the Science Bureau developed a device known as the Brood Totem that worked to attract Killix, and it was planned to use the machine to lure swarms to attack their enemies. In the Cold War, the Dawn Herald Victor Hylos accompanied Imperial Intelligence Agent Cypher 9 and intended to seek out the lost kin that had left on the Great Migration centuries ago. Ambassador Hylos also sought to promote an alliance between the Sith Empire and the Killix. In the eras that followed the end of the Second Great Galactic War, the alien sectoids were considered long extinct, with one of the few traces of the civilization being the ruins with many mysteries surrounding them. This concludes part one of the Killix. Tune in next week for part two, where we'll wrap it up. And I'd like to say thank you to Wikipedia, StarWars.com, Force.net, and all the other great lore sites out there. Folks, if you enjoy the lore as much as I do, Star Wars, and we all know there's tons of it, visit these sites, look up your topics, look for all that lore, get lost in it as I do. You will not be disappointed.
Well, onto the Hall of Feed, and right now, let's get into the Lore Masters Trivia Question of the Week.
Okay, so, just to remind everyone, again, I post the Trivia Question of the Week on and only on our Facebook page at facebook.com/SwordsReforged. Okay, it's going to be posted under my own name, okay, Louis Salon, on Swords Reforged's page. Mm-hmm. Okay, remember, when you give your answer, please include your character name, faction, and server with your answer.
So character name, faction, and server.
Yes. Although I don't mind creating characters, you know, it would help streamline the process if you gave me all three pieces of information. The first three people with the correct answers, they will create the pool. Okay, and one of those from the pool will win the cartel pack, randomly chosen by either Ivarwin or Fred. Okay, what happens is that of the three finalists, you're each assigned a number. Only I know who's assigned what number, and either Fred or Ivarwin just pick a number out of their head. Okay, and whatever number they pick, that person wins. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So, just to get everything straight, okay, this week's finalists. Okay, I'm not going to say the last names on air, so it's Brian C, Chris S, and Dan K.
Brian C, Chris S, and Dan K.
All right. So if you're listening and you've posted on Facebook, you know who you are. All right, so here's the clue again from last week. 1. I was once a lush green world and home to a Jedi enclave. 2. A cataclysmic disaster turned me into a fiery hell. 3. I was used as a home for criminals, outlaws, and secessionists. 4. Witnessed a tragic battle between best friends. 5. Galactic rumors held that once an ancient assassin droid made its home here. Who? What? Am I? Who? What? Am I? Pause. Pause. It's killing you, isn't it? All right. And I do want to point this out, too. I know some of you started your own little thread within our Facebook page actually debating the answers.
Really?
To this week's. Yes.
What was the other answer that they were debating? Because to me, it seems obvious.
Well, I mean, some people posted the correct answer, and then I noticed one or two of them actually second-guessed themselves, and thank God they created their own thread, because if they posted that on the actual trivia question, disqualification. So, this week's answer is Mustafar.
Ah, very good.
Okay. Because before Mustafar became the fiery hell that it is now that you see in Revenge of the Sith, it was once a lush green planet. Okay?
Oh, that's interesting. How did that happen?
No one knows. Apparently, according to planetary geologists, no one knows what happened, but all they do know is that something happened long ago in Mustafar's history that ruined its surface and caused its crust to crack and weaken and become what it is today. All right, no one knows when it happened, but all they do know is that, this is what had to have happened to turn Mustafar into this because of all of the evidence they had found of its previous existence.
Right.
Okay, that it had, you know, plant life and all such everything, you know, on it beforehand. Okay. Going throughout its timeline from Mustafar, because especially within the Republic, just before the rise of the Galactic Empire, okay? Mm-hmm. As you see in the movies, Mustafar was home to secessionists, okay? It was also used as a base of operations for lots of criminal organizations and outlaw groups. Especially, most famous of them were the Black Sun. Okay, if you've ever played Star Wars Galaxies, and especially if you did questing on there, and especially outside of its space, because there's also space PvE content out there as well, you would encounter them as pirates in their own starships, and have to fight them off and do stuff against them.
Black Sun's on Nar Shaddaa too.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, they are. In a criminal galactic organization, but Black Sun had a big base of operations in Mustafar as well. Okay, and of course,
I wonder if that has any link in to the Black Hand from the old New York City gang from the 1800s.
This has nothing to do with the Dark Brotherhood, Evalwin.
We know. And, of course, you know, from clue number four, what did we see happen in episode 3? All right?
Nothing, because nobody watched it.
To me, personally, one of the best saber fights I've ever seen animated. Okay, or you're done. I mean, look at that epic fight between Obi-Wan and Anakin.
Yeah, that paid off.
Yeah, I mean, when I remember, think about it. When we first saw episode 1, that fight between Qui-Gon, Ben, and Maul, all right, that was great, but oh my god. I mean, they stepped that up by 1,000 when that final fight between, that epic fight when Anakin finally turns and now, you know, best friend against best friend. You know, and they're, two of the best saber duelists, saber wielders in the galaxy.
Yeah, they really got that feeling across of you're fighting yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look at them. I mean, think about it. When they both pull out their lightsabers, they both got the same color.
Yeah.
All right. Blue blade against blue blade. Almost similar construction with some slight differences. And, man, what a great fight, but tragic fight that was.
Yeah.
I hope with the new episode you see Luke do some badass stuff like that. Because back when Mark Hamill was playing Luke Skywalker, the technology just wasn't there to make him do that stuff. But now that he's supposed to be a Jedi Master, I want to see him do some impressive stuff like Yoda did in the newer movies.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Oh my god, Yoda, that faker. Episode 2. Hey, let me drop this cane. Oh, you little con artist. You can walk. And again, a little known note, there was some content on there, or, you know, especially from Galaxies and also in the history that, ancient assassin droid, hint, hint, you know, HK-47 supposedly was there for a while. Okay, because there were rumors on that planet that there, you know, some crazy droid had taken over a factory.
Yeah.
And was trying to produce more copies of himself. All right, and that was actually one of the raid content that you had to do on Mustafar in Star Wars Galaxy. You actually had to take him down. So, it's Mustafar. So, again, Brian C., Chris S., and Dan K., and I have them in the appropriate numbers. Only I have the allocations here. So, who chose last week?
I think it was Fred.
Yep, so Ivarwin. 1 through 3.
I'll choose number one because he's the number one winner this week.
Okay. So our winner is Chris S.
Hey, Chris S.
Yay, Chris. So Chris S, if you're listening today or when you listen to the podcast, you know your last name. Chris S. Be on the lookout from me. What I am going to do is I am going to create a character in your server, and I'm going to send you an in-game email with your free cartel pack. All right, I will give you appropriate information, identify myself so you know I'm not a gold spammer. Credit spammer. You know it's going to be me. So, again.
And now that we've gone and got Chris excited, take your bow and pick another number.
Chris S., congratulations. And guys, wow, keep it up. I love that discussion bit you had on our page. Trying to figure out the answer. That's awesome. Keep it up.
Well, some of you out there decided to reach out to us on Twitter this week.
Oh, hold on. Before we start reading these, I saw you reach out to Amber Green this last week. Told her that the free-to-play model was complete crap and that she should consult with the EA to get another one.
Amber Green said she was going to BioWare. I said, while you're there, you should mention that the free-to-play model is not good. And she said, well, the people for that discussion are actually back at Austin. Okay, all right, very good, very good.
You're like, well played, Green, and then she sent back this mutated cat face. I thought that was well played, though. Used the first opportunity you could to complain about the free-to-play system.
Well, it's really the only thing in this game worth complaining about, in my opinion. I really think that the game is fantastic. But the free-to-play system is like a huge barrier to entry. A lot of people, like, when they subscribe to this game, they're like, oh, man, it's great. I love this game. Unfortunately, that free-to-play...
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
You heard it here, Lou. We got him on record saying that Treek is not worth complaining about.
Treek is not worth complaining about. Well, we'll see when I get Treek.
Trust me, dude. Every fight you do...
That horn? Come on. Seriously? That's gotta go.
She's just gonna talk every time you do a fight. Repeat it. Like, not even like that. It's gonna be worse. No, the other one. Yeah, that.
Ugh. Right on, poor Q2. Poor little guy.
I'm going to make Jawa sausage out of Blizz, and then I'll be coming back for you, Drake.
Oh, duh, come on. Blizz is cool. Sorry, you preach
on.
You're
just going to stand there and let us say that about your mother, Evolwyn?
So you reach out to us on Twitter. Buckeye says at Swotori Forge that Jawa balloon is still bugged. I tried it 3 weeks ago. Few good hours wasted. No April Fool's joking here. My guild has a saying. It's not a bug. It's a feature. Madmar says good time to listen to last night's Swotori Forge. Leveling and podcasting go hand in hand. And then he says, I think Datacron should be a legacy wide. And nicely said what you said to the guy who said to talk about Tiso. And then he additionally weighs in by saying, I think knockback is annoying, but only when it happens to me. It definitely has a place in the game. Extra interrupt from Madmar at Swotor Family. King Leonidas says, madness?
This is Sparta!
At King Leonidas.
Oh, sorry. Someone fall into a pit.
Ben B. Ben B says, I found another Star Wars item of the week. Who doesn't want to, And who doesn't want to suck on a Gungan's tongue, right? In the words of Sith Lord Korv, ha ha ha. And let me get this.
There will be no laughing here, you pervert.
Oh my god.
Do you see that this insanity exists. Right here? It's a Star Wars lollipop from Episode 1. I remember this. When I worked at Blockbuster Video back in 1999, when Star Wars Episode 1 was on its way.
Hey, one terrible thing at a time. We're going to cover this lollipop, and then we'll come back to you working at Blockbuster.
Listen, I was 18, okay? That was the best job an 18-year-old could get back then.
I don't give a damn. That's still pathetic.
Could have been worse.
You could have been the one having to suck on Jar Jar's tongue.
Well, I wasn't. I was simply peddling this.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
I mean, is it who is the Lucas licensing division said, I know, how great would that be? And like okayed this crap.
This should definitely be in an adult toy shop instead of at a movie theater being served to children.
I'm not going to argue that.
Yeah.
This is horrible.
I'm even more mad at the fact that someone made money off of this idea.
All this thing needs is a button that tickles your presses.
Jesus, Fred!
Next topic.
T. Chala on Twitter says at SWTOR Forge, wondering just how customizable player housing will be in SWTOR. Gary S. then says, Ashara wanted me to let you know she likes her yellow-blue crystal very much. Thank you. And Pink War Hero PvP. Aw, yeah. Lewis says at SWTOR, for an event like today, you'll need an app for your phone, and at SWTOR Family, TauroCast, UtiniCast, SWTOR Forge, who else agrees? We totally agree. Ben B. says, love my tweaked audio earbuds. Ordered a pair for my sister. Thanks, SWTOR Forge, for constantly recommending them. You're welcome, Ben. And Donald H. says, hey, quick FYI for SWTOR Forge with a link. And you forward this, grab over to this link, and the question is, Star Wars Episode 7 has begun filming already?
Yeah, that's what I said. When Fred first told me about this, I was like, I could have sworn the official word was that they weren't going to start until May of this year.
Yeah. Which I find very interesting. What I also find very interesting is that we're actually going to seriously read out some journalism, in quotes, that's off of MTV.com, because they can be a trusted source, I suppose. But MTV.com reporting saying, wondering when J.J. Abrams will finally get started on Star Wars Episode 7, given the dearth of news surrounding the project. Turns out it's already started shooting. Speaking with a crowd at Loyola Marymount School of Film and Television in L.A., Disney Studios Chairman Alan Horn dropped a few surprising details about the space-bound sequel. In quotes, we're actually shooting some of it now, Horn said, when asked whether filming would begin in May, as expected, based on previous comments from director Abrams. Very interesting stuff, and thank you to Donald. Facebook, we asked, who listened to last Monday's April Fool's episode? Dan K. said, I did, and I'm glad I wasn't in the chat room for the beginning, though when Avarwin said, I hate this game and I hate everyone who plays it, I about died laughing. Mike M. says, I did. I also glad I wasn't in the chat room, and I'm glad. Brian C. says, I was in the chat when Avarwin said that. I figured it was April Fool's. Then the stream died. I didn't know what to think.
That was perfect timing.
Tony T says, listening to it right now, middle of the lore wars.
Oh.
Your Swotor community podcasts are weighing in this week with Utini Cast. Utini! Episode 128 is available at utinicast.com since April 3rd. And the Swotor Escape podcast, episode 32, is available at newoverlords.com since March 31st. And the Bad Feeling podcast, episode 8, posted on April 3rd. Be warned, though, it is explicit. And, of course, do not forget to follow our friend Madmar at Swotor Family for all the latest happenings in the Swotor community. If you want to get your podcast listed on this segment, just send us an email at swotorreforged@gmail.com. Well, that about does it for our show this week. Great show, everyone. Apparently, Bodar here wasn't too happy about it, though. Aw.
Bodar just wants to know what his Jar Jar sucker is. Imagine picking all the hair out of that.
Well, QGN community segment, guys. If you want to know more about this show, go to swotorreforged.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/swotorreforged. And send us an email at swotorreforged.com. You can tweet us at swotorreforged. That's SWTORREFORGED. I'm Avarwin. You can follow me at Avarwin. That's EVARWYN. Lou is at GamerGuy11B, GamerGuy11B, and Fred is at SithLordKorv, KORV. Time for your final thoughts, guys, and we'll start with Fred.
Well, I think I may have pushed things a bit too far toward the latter part of this episode.
Nothing a little center button there can't fix.
I apologize.
It's all good. And Lou.
Wow. Great episode. I can't. Oh, where do I begin? Mace the Ace. His question about the one server. You know what? Great idea. If it only had happened from the beginning. But I think as of now, I think a little too late. It would just cost too much. But you know what? There's always hope. We never know.
I am currently going out right now to purchase my Admiral Ackbar. It's a crap! Decal. For my toilet seat. This was a fun episode. Right, Bodar? Okay, very good. And that is it. That is our show. Thanks for hanging out with us here on the ship. We appreciate it, of course. Hopefully we'll be able to get this thing working. And
come on! Piece of crap. Oh!
Hold on. Wait. I'll shoot it with some dark side light.
Hold on.
No!
Actually, that one light over there is working, and... Have a good night, everyone!
Yeah! Remember, the Force will be with you, always.
Couple of them started second-guessing themselves. Some of them had the right answer, but then they started their own thread, and they started second-guessing themselves. Like, wait a minute. You know? It could be Ossus instead of Mustafar. Like, no, it's... you know what? Never mind. Start your own thread. That's cool. At least you're debating on our site.
Mm.
They're all there, like, on Family Double Dare, all hunched together. What do you think?
I'm telling you, she's got the answer. No, man, I'm telling you. A couple of those clues are more vague.
We're going to go with the physical challenge.
Mark Summers is shaking his head.
I'm gonna go with Lifeline.
This is ruffling my 80s hair.
You know what? We're just gonna jump up the giant nose and climb through the boogers to find the flag.
Oh my god.
We wrote the answer on the flag.
I really wish I'd strapped them before we did that. Did we take off or explode?